I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hey, I'm Adam Carolla.
Hi, my name is Penn Jillette.
Not only listening, I'm a guest.
I'm a Penn and Teller, and I am the fourth listener.
And I am the fourth listener.
And that must make me at least the fourth listener.
To keep our three listeners coming back, we must be doing something right. And if you're the fourth listener, we thank you for the support. You can get every episode with no ads at patreon.com/DavidCSmalley and take advantage of your fourth listener status.
And we're going to sue David Smalley for slander.
With a world divided, it's time to resurrect nuance and remember the importance of conversation. He's an actor, he's a comedian, and he'll make you think. This is David C. Smalley.
Welcome to the podcast. Michael, how are you?
I am well.
It's weird today because it happens to be raining in LA.
Yeah.
Or the LA area, at least. And people are out here aren't used to driving in the rain. So rain here, traffic's already bad enough, but it changes your life like a lot.
Yeah.
Like people, I don't know what it's such a weird experience. Like, it's like that everywhere. Of course, rain causes more traffic, but it's just a different animal out here. Like, people literally cancel meetings because it's raining.
Rightly so. You know who's terrible at driving in the rain? This guy. Can't do it.
I've had texts before, like, maybe after a year I was here, I remember some meeting scheduled at like 11 a.m. And the person texted and was like, all right, so when do we reschedule? And I was like, what? Like, it's raining. When do you want to redo this meeting? Like, what? We're not meeting at the park. Like,
yeah.
We're not having a picnic. What do you mean reschedule? Like, yeah, yeah. Come on. It's raining. Like, yeah. It was just given. It was like, clearly it's raining. We're not going.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the culture.
Well, yeah. It's also something I've heard, and this is just me repeating something I heard, that like first rains of the year, or the earliest rains of the year, something about the roads are more slick.
They are, because of the oils and stuff that drip along the road most of the time, and then they dry, and then when the rain comes, it's a little extra slicky.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm glad you made it out.
I made it out.
This is good.
Made it out in the rain.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump into this. You know what? I ask on the form, when you go to davidcsmalley.com and you click to be a guest, I've never seen this on someone else's form whenever you're checking. One of the questions is, what worldview do you most disagree with? Like, we want to know what you disagree with, so that's what we can talk about, because that's what the show's about, is that you know, that's what the platform is here for. And this answer, I thought, was really unique. Our guest said, I most disagree with an atheist scientific worldview. And it gets even more interesting from there. So join me in welcoming SW to the show. SW, how are you today, sir?
Thank you. I'm doing well.
That's an interesting way to answer that question. Atheist scientific worldview. So tell me a little bit about your background. I know you say here that you're a deist and a relativist, but talk us through your upbringing. Were you raised in a Christian environment? Are you a believer of the Christian religion? Tell us how you got here.
Well, my father, he was raised, he was born in Germany. He was raised in a small Catholic town. My mother, she was born in the States. Her family escaped the revolution in Russia. So I'm kind of a mix of German Jew.
Oh,
and
okay.
So growing up, we celebrated Hanukkah. We celebrated Christmas. We weren't particularly religious, per se. Kind of an interesting story. My dad migrated to the U.S. where he met my mom, and he tried to become American, and he did become an American. And right off, he was sent to Germany in the army. And when he went to marry my mother, the Catholic priest said that he was a bad Catholic for marrying my mother. And so pretty much he never went to church after that.
Wow.
And so that's basically my upbringing.
Michael, you were Catholic.
Yeah.
Is he right? Is he a bad Catholic for doing that?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that was some years ago. Nowadays, I think the Catholic Church would do just about anything to keep people in the church. And I would be curious as to what exactly that priest was up to that was pointing fingers at your father and calling him a bad Catholic when knowing the track record of the Catholic Church. So, yeah. I mean, the Catholic Church, yeah. I mean, they definitely have a history of anti-Semitism and a number of other things under their belt. So, when was that roughly at SW that was happening?
Well, that was in, I was born in 61, so a couple of years before that, late 50s.
Yeah.
My father was in the Army, and he had to ask permission to marry when you're in the Army, and you're sent to whatever you put down for your religion, you're sent to them to get approval, so...
Interesting. Yeah. So that was probably in the 50s. I'm trying to figure out if that was pre or post Vatican II when the Catholic Church.
Well, I can tell you though, Michael, when I was just starting my sort of radio and sort of, you know, work in that whole industry, I called into a Catholic radio show, the Catholic Answers, actually in Texas, a radio station. And because there was a priest on there doing a Q&A. And while I was on hold, I had this whole thing ready. I had this gotcha question. I was going to have this little fun debate with him. And while I was on hold, you know how you call into a radio station, you can hear the current, you know, show. This other man calls in and is asking, not really permission, but he says, I'm going to be marrying my fiance's Methodist. And we're going to be getting married in her church because her father is a pastor and he's going to do the honors. And my mom refuses to come to the wedding, and I just want to know, how can I get my mom to accept my wife and join us at the wedding? And I was on hold thinking, oh, he's going to sound like such a good guy. He's going to bring everyone together. He floored me. He goes, well, if you're getting married in a Methodist church, you're not really married. So you're wasting your time, and your mom's refusing to take part in your silly antics. And so when they brought me on, I couldn't even remember my question. I just went after that priest for dividing families. And I was like, whether Jesus exists or not, Matthew 10:34 is spot on. You're using him to divide family. And I was so angry. I came off probably as this angry atheist when I was angry. I was upset that he was on this show telling people that your marriage is invalid and you're marrying a woman in a building that doesn't have our symbols on it. So therefore, and yeah. It's just like, I was so infuriated. And that was just like 2010, probably. Yeah. 2009. And
asking permission for the Catholic Church is an old tradition. In fact, my mother is a diabetic. She was pregnant 8 times. My mother told me at one point that the doctor told her, if you get pregnant again, you will die. It will kill you. And I said, well, what did you do? And she said, I was an adult at this point, talking to my mother as a fellow adult. And she says, well, what do you think I did? I said, you took care of it. She said, no, we went and asked the Catholic Church if I could get my tubes tied. So he went and asked. Sorry, here I go. David's.
You're editing you after the fact becomes a bigger debate than any debate I've had on the show. Yes. That's the real fight happens. Is bringing
you went and asked some old virgin if you could get your tubes tied so you wouldn't die. Mom, what if he said no?
What is it with that?
Just,
when people
would you have just died? What are you? I mean, fortunately, they said yes.
I want to bring the guest in on this. SW, I know you don't agree with our worldview. I know that you most disagree with atheism. But do you see a problem with that, with someone having a doctor tell them something about their medical decisions they should be making, and they instead go ask a priest or a religious leader for their opinion?
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone is different, and it depends how she was raised and who she sees authority in, and what her values are and how she's feeling and all these sorts of things. On the surface, no, it doesn't seem like that would be something that she should do or advisable to do. But the way I look at religion and the way I look at science is basically, people tell us what religion is, We don't, and the same thing with science. You learn it by by tradition, and then you mimic it or you imitate it, and then the more you do it, it becomes cemented. And so this process, it makes it very difficult for people to, you know, sometimes make rational and logical decisions.
Yeah, so you would acknowledge then that someone's religious beliefs and rituals would largely come from where they are born and the beliefs of their parents, not necessarily what is true.
Yes, I can agree. I can agree with that. That's just the idea with culture. I mean, you know, if you look, talking about a scientific view, let's say you go back and you look at hunter-gatherers, okay? And hunter-gatherers, there's a debate whether they were misogynist, but they were certainly patriarchal, and they were certainly religious. And so if you describe this in a evolutionary way, that's going to lead to more religious and patriarchal babies because they fit into the society. So
right, right.
The culture and what they learn, that determines the outcome. And, you know, in that way, well, it kind of depends on you with science, if it has motivation or intent, or it's just no intent.
Well, and I mean, so, as an atheist, though, which is the worldview you most disagree with, I of course think she has the freedom to, you know, talk with her religious leaders if she so chooses. But I think that's a really bad way to go about decision-making. I think that is the opposite of critical thinking. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, does she do the same thing with the mechanic is what I would ask her. I would say, if you go and they say, well, we need to replace these three things on your car or your wheels are going to fall off. Does she, you know, call the Catholic priest and say, what do you think about my car? Should I get these things replaced? Or like, why is it that religious people tend to push the expert to the side in exchange for a person who's really not an expert in anything other than their own faith?
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, like I said, I wasn't raised religious. And then when I got older and I had a girlfriend and she was a member of the Catholic Church. And so I thought to have a good marriage that, you know, I would become Catholic. And so I went through the process. I was Catholic a little bit. I later became evangelical Christian because I met my current wife. And so she was Christian. And I thought, you know, we should be on the same page. So I did that. I later left Christianity. And from my perspective, we see a lot of people. I was like a deacon in the church, you know, we went on mission trips and so on and so forth. And I saw, quote unquote, people saved. I saw, you know, Muslims become Christians. I saw some Jews become Christians. I saw Christians becoming Muslims. For the most part, the people that I was involved with in their everyday life, they didn't really care about theology. They didn't care about whether the truth about God is that was their community. And it was a positive thing for them. It answered questions for them. You know, when you look up at the stars, what's the meaning of life and what the universe is and whether you deserve or entitled to good things or bad things. And what if bad things happen to you? You know, your sense of helplessness sometimes, your sense of incompleteness, and all these things, whether the doctrine was true or not, the reactions and the feelings they had and the community they have, that is real. And if you measure that in a scientific way, you simply can't deny that those were authentic religious experiences, not in a supernatural way, but in a humanistic way.
Very real to that person, for sure. Yeah, I and I'm on board with that. I get that we can't necessarily invalidate someone else's personal experience, but also that personal experience should not be granted as sufficient evidence for them to make laws and govern the behavior of other people. So then we get into the politics of all of this. But I do have a question for you about your conversion from Catholicism to evangelical Christianity. And that is, I understand if you're not very religious at all, you meet a woman, she happens to be Catholic, she wants to be involved with the church, so you convert. Now, I would have some pushback there. I would have some questions. Why, you know, doesn't it have to be true? Don't you have to acknowledge in your heart that Jesus Christ died for your sins? You can't just be like, well, my wife's hot, that's why I want to be Catholic. You know, you have to believe this stuff for it to actually count. Otherwise, you're trying to trick some sort of celestial intelligent genius, which doesn't make much sense. But I assume that you just went full bore. You just went all in and you believed it. So I guess that's the first question. Did you actually believe Catholicism was true when you converted, or was it purely just a cultural thing for your partnership?
Well, I mean, I went through the whole thing. I went through adult catechism.
Yeah, but did you believe it? Did you really believe it to be true?
Well, naturally, I'm a skeptic anyway, and so I'm always skeptical about things. And so when you get, now I've had quite a bit of education, and so when you think about belief, I mean, that's a tricky thing, because if you look at, I'm not sure if it was Plato or Socrates, you know, that knowledge was justified true belief. Mm-hmm. And so faith basically is probably not justified, and it could be, or it could be false belief. And so everyone has some kind of belief system. I mean, you can't function too well in the society.
Right. But SW, I'm being very clear though. I want to know, did you believe in Catholicism? Did you, when you were getting confirmed, did you, because I mean, I could go through the catechism right now. I could go get a degree in theology. I could go to my local church and go there every single Sunday and participate and go through and become a deacon, and I could even become a pastor. I know enough to make that happen, but I wouldn't be able to lie to myself. When I came home that day, I don't know that I would, I couldn't pretend to believe something I didn't really believe. So my question for you is, as a non-religious person, when you became Catholic, did you actually really and truly believe in your heart? Did you really believe that Jesus had died for your sins and that Catholicism was true?
Well, probably no, but as every new person goes, you go step by step, and you're taught, you can't have all the knowledge of the Catholic Church in one fell swoop.
Sure. Well, so through time, you eventually did start to believe it?
Well, it wasn't matter in that particular, it didn't really matter to me on the intellectual level whether it was true or not, because I think it's probably in my DNA, as I'm a skeptic and I'm also a relativist. So the pragmatic part of me, with family and with raising a family and family interactions, it just doesn't make sense to me to be an atheist in the Catholic family. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make for...
Well, but SW, it's important to differentiate what you are being versus what you are admitting to be, right? Like
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that you're going, and you can be a part of it, and you can just be super quiet about your skepticism and really be an atheist because you don't believe any of this is true, but you could still continue to play part of it. There are people listening to us speak right now in that situation. There are people who are in church, who are active members of the church. Some of them are preachers and pastors. I hear from them on a regular basis. They listen to the show. They are very much atheist, but they don't tell their wife. They don't tell their husband. They don't tell their boss. They don't tell the pastor that at the church they preach at. They quietly send me an email under a pseudonym and say, I want you to know I appreciate what you do. I appreciate the respectful conversations. I like that the show's funny and lighthearted, but please don't tell anybody that this is what I do for a living. And it's like, I know that they can go through the motion, so you can go through. So whenever you say it doesn't make sense to be an atheist in a Catholic family, what you're really saying, SW, is it doesn't make sense to be honest about my atheism because it's going to hurt my Catholic wife's feelings and it could potentially split up my family. So I have to hide who I really am. I have to hide my skepticism. I don't get to really be me. I have to put that on the back burner for the good of the overall family unit.
Well, I mean, you know, if, you know, people can, you can describe religiousness, or you can, a doctor can describe if you're drunk, a doctor can describe if you have schizophrenia, but knowing about religiousness and knowing about God and being religious, those are two different things. Knowing about being drunk is not essentially the same as being drunk, or knowing about schizophrenia is not the same. So if you're telling me that you have to be full on board and believe it, then I have to push back on that a little bit, because we all have varying degrees of belief. And in life and in science and in everything, there is going to be truth and there's going to be falseness. And the question of truth is a really, for me, is a really tricky one, because I don't have like a big T. I have truths that are very pragmatic, but to ruin my pragmatism with some lofty things that we can't prove or disprove, I don't know. I have a problem with that, and so, you know, I was told something, I don't know, a long time ago, I don't know if it's a quote from someone, and it's, you know, a specialist or an expert is someone who knows more and more about less and less, and the generalist studies a little bit about more and more until he knows nothing about everything. And so in our life, in our beliefs, you know, we have to defer to other people, whether in our education, whether in our church, whether in our relationships, whether in our job. And so, you know, I don't think it's possible to believe in every single thing that you do in life.
Okay, but from a Christian perspective, and we haven't really gotten into what your current views are, but from a Christian perspective, there are multiple Bible verses. Rather, you, and mostly we're talking New Testament as well, just 1 Corinthians, James, I know there's some in John and Romans. Many of them will say things like, you have to confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord. You have to believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead for you to be saved. It pleases God to save those who believed. They are saved from judgment if they hold fast to belief. These messages, largely, of course, written by Paul, but are still, you know, accepted as scripture, right, are very much about one having to have that belief. So you can push back on it. That's great. That's what the show's about. But if you're pushing back on the idea that you have to believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior and believe all of these things in order to enter heaven, you would also be pushing back against the Bible, because that is what it says.
Right. I understand. Being a former Christian, I don't think too highly of Paul.
Okay. Well, good. We have that in common for sure.
And so, you know, just a couple of examples, you know, when Jesus read from the Isaiah scroll, he said he was going to bring sight to the blind and heal the lame and so on and so forth. And the first encounter, well, and then Jesus said before he was leaving, he said, you'll know when I come back, no one's going to see me. Don't believe anyone that says that they have seen me. And what does Paul report? Paul reports that he is struck blind and lame. And so, and then he quotes Jesus as saying, why did you kick me in the gonads? I mean, this, you know, this is to me a big contradiction. And so it doesn't.
I guess what I was getting to in my questioning was whenever your second wife came along.
Yes.
And you then.
Well, it was actually my first wife. I never got married the first time.
Oh, okay. You were about to though, and that's why you were Catholic. Okay, so whenever your current partner came along, you rather than attempting to convert her to Catholicism, you accepted her conversion to evangelical Christianity. And I want to know why that is. Why did you take on her religion instead of bring her into Catholicism if you had really believed it was true? I thought you were going to tell me, yes, you ultimately believed that the Catholic Church was the true church. And then my follow-up was going to be, then why did you convert to evangelical Christianity? Why didn't you bring her into your belief? But it sounds like you never really latched on to Catholicism or believed in the resurrection of Jesus.
Well, I kind of have a unique, I don't see it's a unique perspective, but coming from a Jewish and a Catholic background, I could see, you know, I didn't come here to talk about theology, but you could see, for example, in the Passover and the resurrection, and everything that was being done, it's, you know, the seven festivals, mm-hmm. So on and so forth. So there's a lot of matchup on like Old Testament stuff and the reason why Jesus did what he did. And so ultimately I don't discount, you know, Jesus Christ, even though that's not his name and so on and so forth. But I guess maybe I closely more resemble what Thomas Jefferson did. Thomas Jefferson, he removed everything that Paul wrote out of the Bible, and he latched on to those things, the qualities of what he thought Jesus Christ were.
And according to the Bible, Thomas Jefferson would be cast out.
Oh, of course.
Specifically Matthew 7, 21, I believe. He Thomas Jefferson would be one of those guys going, hey, didn't we do all the right things? Didn't we do nice things? Didn't we mention your name and cast out demons in your name? Didn't we? And then Jesus said, did you do the will of my Father who was in heaven? Depart from me, those of you who practice lawlessness or whatever. So especially with the stuff that we know Thomas Jefferson did, he was not a guy that held on to those beliefs. So the Jefferson Bible is heresy to the Christian church. And according to Jesus in Matthew 7:21, Thomas Jefferson would not be allowed into heaven.
Yeah, of course. But that was also a time where evangelical Christianity wasn't the main thing anyway. But there was a lot of deists around at the time. They were basically, you know, escaping from the Church of England.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you had Puritanism, you know, where our schools came from and so on and so forth. So it wasn't really evangelical Christianity. So
yeah,
you know, to compare that to now is, I don't know. I don't think we can make a fair comparison.
Right. Right.
Right. Well, I mean, things have changed so much since then and now, including religious beliefs. So, I mean, that's why you said that you have to defer to everything in life, from science to teachers to religion. But I mean, those are such different categories. A scientist is actually a studied person who understands the field that they have expertise in. Whereas when you say you defer to the priests or to the rabbis, this is just somebody's interpretation of the same book you can read, and they're ultimately guessing about an invisible deity. So why is it that you think those two things are comparable when you say everyone has to defer to the experts?
Well, I mean, everyone doesn't have knowledge about everything. And
right, but a religious expert can't possibly have knowledge about the things they claim to have. They can have knowledge of the religious texts, but the big question, they're guessing just like you.
I mean, you can take Galileo, you can take Newton, you can take whoever, and they all had false beliefs.
Right.
Mean, the things and that they...
The modern scientist has improved upon that. They built upon Galileo and Newton's beliefs, whereas modern theologians have just twisted and changed their opinion bit depending on the social mores of our times. Yeah. They haven't built on anything. They've basically just become, and I know this is a term that you don't like because you mentioned it in the email you sent us, they've just become more woke. Modern religion is more woke compared to the old religion. Old religious people thought that slavery was okay because it said so in the Bible. Modern religious scholars say it's not okay, and then they twist and they turn and they find a way to make it not okay by their text.
Yeah, so back this kind of, that kind of points right back to my second question. If you had found the quote unquote truth in the Catholic Church, whenever your wife came around and you were like, okay, she's an evangelical Christian, why did you convert to that? As opposed to holding on to your Catholicism,
I wasn't a continuing Catholic, a practicing Catholic when I met my wife. I looked quite a bit at science, and I saw the same weaknesses. I wouldn't say there were problems, but the same weaknesses with science, with about dogmatics. About what you have to believe. For example, in the Catholic faith, you have to believe that church father, and then they said, and you have to believe him, and then you have to believe the next guy, and you have to believe, you know, Vatican II or whatever. And so so it's a long line of knowledge that you have to believe, and this is the same in science too. I mean, you can't get anywhere. You can't get peer reviewed if you just simply deny that Einstein knew what he was talking about.
Right. You have to prove it, which you don't have to do with
religion. You test it. Test it for falsifiability and for repeated results over and over. You don't just blindly believe whatever Newton said and say that's the law. And in fact, if you disprove Newton's law, you get a Nobel Peace Prize. We reward challenging authority in science.
Right. Yeah. But in Catholicism, you just have to blindly believe in transubstantiation, that the, you know, cracker, as some people call it, the wafer, the communion host, becomes the literal body of Christ. You just have to believe that. And to question that is
heresy.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you say that you don't believe something that Albert Einstein proved, you have to bring the evidence.
Yeah. They'll say, oh, that's great. Prove it.
Yeah.
Cool hypothesis, bro. Show us.
And the minute you prove it, you're accepted by every scientist.
No, you know that's not true.
Of course I know that's true.
The peer review process is very dogmatic. You can't get stuff published unless you go.
That sounds like
with the flow.
It's a modern conservative trope. And it goes after climate science and everything they don't like because they're sponsored by corporate oil companies and every other thing. That is why that talking point exists on Fox News and other things. That it's dogmatic and these professors are just trying to get grants. None of it's true and none of it can be proven.
Yeah, how many colleges and how many universities are conservative?
Well, that speaks to how accurate the conservative worldview is. How many scientists are conservative? You could be economically conservative. It depends on what you call conservative. There used to be a thing called conservative that was an economic policy that had to do with, but nowadays it's all about loyalty to the red team. When you say, are they conservative? Well, no scientist is conservative because you turn on Fox News on any given night and they're saying that climate scientists are all a bunch of liars just out for the money. When in reality, they are refuting it because the fossil fuel companies that are just out for the money are paying them to do it. They if you follow the money, then you clearly don't go on the side of the scientist. I mean, if you follow the money, the problem, the people that are influenced by money are clearly the people making hundreds of billions of dollars off of climate science denial, the fossil fuel companies.
Yeah, in the applied sciences, you have scientific notions, right? And then they're politicized, but they're abused, and yeah, but the liberals are just as good at it as the conservatives.
In what way? And let me add to that, just in general, the more education one has, the less likely they are to be religious. These are Pew Research studies that shows this. The more education someone has, you know, you go up, you know, bachelor's degree, master's, PhD, like fewer people with PhDs believe these things and are conservative than people who have master's degrees and so on the way down. So why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I think the standard has shifted. I mean, if you're a classical liberal today, you're conservative because of progressiveness.
I mean, this is so confused. It's been so changed in the last five.
But that didn't answer my question.
I know.
I want to know why you think that the trend line with more education shows less religious and less conservatism.
Well, I mean, I have kids that gone to a university here in California, and the liberal point of view is really overemphasized. I mean, it's in classes you can't in classes in like English and literature and history, you can't espouse conservative views. You get canceled. You get bad grades from the professors because they are all liberal.
In what way? Can you give me something specific? So, I mean, I know you don't have it all in front of you, but that's a pretty broad brush to say, to just make that accusation. Like, what? Give me something specific that someone could say in a history class that would be considered a quote conservative viewpoint to get a bad grade. I mean, okay. If I have an idea, if there's a history professor doing a quote unquote conservative position that I was taught in my seventh grade Texas history class, which was that the Civil War was not really about slavery. It was about states' rights and financial disagreements. Actually, financial disagreements was number one. States' rights was number two. And that it wasn't really about slavery, and that I should take pride in the Confederate flag as a part of my heritage being in Texas, in a Texas history class. So if a college professor was saying that, or if a college professor was saying the Civil War was about slavery, and it was racism, and this Confederate flag represents those who wanted to own black people, and a liberal student raises their hand, I'm sorry, a conservative student raises their hand and says, nah, you're wrong, man. It was about financial disagreements, and that flag doesn't represent racism at all. If you would consider that a conservative view that would get that person a bad grade, I would say he didn't get a bad grade because it was conservative. He got a bad grade because he was historically and factually inaccurate.
Yeah, professors have the ability that the professors aren't always even-handed. And we've discussed this I've discussed this with my kids. And my oldest one, basically the position that he took to stop from getting lower grades was to pretend to be a liberal and espouse liberal views. And then the teacher started, you know, showing him as an example in class, and people started coming and talking to him, and he basically had to tell them, I don't really believe this, but
I would need something specific, because if you mean, you know, pretending to be liberal, he, you know, embraced reality and science and climate change and the truth about these things, then he's just, you know, that's not liberal or conservative. I would need something more specific, because if there is a teacher out there or a professor out there that is actually treating someone differently because they have a different political worldview, and I'm sure that could happen. I'm sure it does happen.
Sure it does happen.
I mean, I was in high school once. I was in college once. I know how people treat you differently, and I do get that, but getting in trouble for having that certain kind of view would be really weird. Or getting lower grades, even.
I was literally in college once.
Yeah, it's like a not day. Getting in trouble, but it's passive aggressiveness. It's letting the let's say that you're a professor and you're a critical race theory.
Okay.
You don't talk about critical race theory, but the assumption there is that you can't argue against that, or you can't even talk about it because it's already been decided. Mm. And so,
okay. I know that we would disagree on, you know, gender studies and critical race theory. And I do see inherent problems. I do see inherent problems with some of those things. I do see inherent problems with some of the, like safe zone situations and safe space situations. I see a need for them on some level, and then I see them being abused and overused. And we could have deep dive conversations about those individual issues, but
hold on. I mean,
I think that gets away from the point.
We're talking about five different things here now. We started with science. I didn't get quite a good at, and when you say critical race theory, if you're talking about Charles Murray and the bell curve, the reason that it gets shot down and it's not a conservative v liberal, it's that everybody else in the field has disagreed and basically shot down. He uses statistics that statisticians have said he misused. So, I mean, if that's what you're talking about, which I know a lot of conservatives like Charles Murray in that book, it's because it's been disproved by his peers. It was peer reviewed. I mean, I'm not going to put words in your mouth and assume that's what you're talking about.
No, the point that I would try to make is that, peer review doesn't, you know, it's like, who's peer reviewing it? It's not like everyone agrees with
experts with relevant degrees in the field.
Right. And the presumption here is if you're scientific, then, and you get facts, then those facts are true.
Right.
And, you know, stepping back a little bit, I mean, in my own way, I like to, I value ethics and morals in scientific and studies. But if you look at a lot of studies, you know, there's confirmation bias. They pick things and choose things that they want to make their point. And it also depends on science. If you think that the natural laws have a purpose or if they have intent.
Right. But that's the point of peer review, is to make sure people don't get by with that type of thing.
Yeah. But right. if
ethics and morals is
he's being so vague. This is just so vague. I don't really know what you're getting.
If you're writing a paper about, let's say the beginning of the universe, mm-hmm. and you're a naturalist.
Okay.
And it's your view that the natural laws don't have purpose, right? You have a bunch of other scientists who say that the natural laws govern how everything forms together, and so those are two different distinct points of view, right? In biology, you had you know, it's gone one direction. I forget what the name of the. Just pick another example. Like you take the theory of color in Newton, right? And then comes later a guy, what's his name? Van Grutte, right? And he didn't particularly like Newton very well. And they both had different, they had both different theories on color.
Right.
And
but.
So are you saying all of this to say, SW, that when someone is in college, they are essentially brainwashed to become liberal and atheist? And that's why the more education you get, the less likely you are to be a believer or a conservative?
I wouldn't call it brainwashed, but there's a definite bias towards producing liberal people.
Okay, so I wouldn't say liberal people. I would say towards reality and what we can prove. So, meaning, here's a perfect example. Here's a perfect example of how a fact-based reality discussion can end up on a political spectrum. Perfect example. When we look at statistics of sex education in this country, the more someone has education and medically accurate sex education in public schools, the less likely they are to get sexually transmitted diseases and teen pregnancy. Teen pregnancy and STIs go down in areas that teach medically accurate sex education, which means they have uncomfortable conversations in high schools. They talk about diseases. They show pictures. They talk about cures. They talk about things that aren't curable. And they have real conversations with 16, 17-year-olds about these things. In more conservative areas, like Kentucky and other states, where there are no laws around medically accurate sex education, teachers can say anything they want in class, quite literally. They can use terms like hoo-hoo and hee-hee and pee-pee and tee-tee and to 16, 17-year-old young men and women. They can use silly words. They can teach abstinence-only sex education. So no condoms, no protection, no safe sex. It's just no sex is the only way to not get diseases. If that's what is taught, we see a spike in sexually transmitted infections as well as teen pregnancy. So you have clear statistics. We have something that is clearly on the side of reality, right? The statistics are there. And these are from, I mean, Johns Hopkins University and the CDC. These are legit statistics that can be challenged and predicted and repeated, and they are falsifiable. They pass the scientific method. Yet, conservatives, by and large, are against teaching medically accurate sex education. And I know this personally because several years ago, I went to D.C. to lobby Congress to teach to pass a bill that said all 50 states must teach medically accurate sex education, that abstinence-only sex education would no longer be allowed, and that everything they taught in the schools had to be medically accurate. That's all we were asking for. Every single Democrat signed on to the bill. Every single Republican refused. So that to me is a perfect example of how conservatism just rejects reality, and the liberals are willing to look at the evidence and the data and say, well, if more kids are being infected and teen pregnancy is a problem in areas where they don't have that education, then we should make a change. And the conservative says, no, let's conserve tradition. Let's hold on to virginity longer. Let's pretend like the science isn't there. And yeah, there's a political divide there. So what do you say to that?
Well, what I say is essentially I agree that we should be educated and we should have accurate education. But from what I can see from my kids, they're all universities now. And even in their younger education, I have four kids, and interacting with all their teachers and helping with them with their homework and seeing what they're taught. I can't speak with other parts of the country. But basically my older one, he was more liberal, right? But then as he got older and he began to analyze things and think about things, he became more conservative. And so, you know, right now with the teacher unions, my wife, works at a school, and some of the things that they are pushing.
But SW, I asked you a very specific question about this medically accurate sex education. You agree with me.
I said I agree that you should have.
Right. I understand you agree with me. That's great. My question, right, though, is why do you think that every conservative said no to things we had scientific evidence for, and every liberal said yes to changing the law based on the science? Why did the conservatives block it?
I don't think it has to do with the merits. It has to do with just politics and the dichotomy, and it's just one against the other.
Right. Right. So
it's not exactly about truth. It's about what side you're on and not letting the other side win.
I'd agree with that.
I do too.
I don't particularly like politics. I think it's
game.
It can be a disservice to our country. But you know, the system is what the system is.
My point though, and I'll let Michael chime in here. I know you've been taking feverish notes over there. I'll let you chime in next, but I want to just make this statement, SW, for you and the listener. My point in illustrating that analogy was, or that specific sample, is to say that it's not that you go through college and then become liberal and get that degree. It's that the more information you have about reality, the more liberal you tend to become. And again, I know there are conservative. I mean, Ted Cruz went to Harvard and has a degree. Mitt Romney is conservative and has a degree. Brian Fisher has a master's degree from Stanford and is one of the most conservative people. Like, I said the word white privilege to him and he hung up on me. Like, he wants no conversation about anything in that area. But I know there are exceptions to the rule, but the trend line tends to go, those who embrace reality, those who accept the science, whether it's mask wearing, vaccines, climate change, birth control, women's health care, sexually transmitted diseases, sex education, those things tend to be ignored. The reality tends to be ignored by conservatives and embraced by liberals. So to me, it's not, they don't get sort of tricked or, you know, make it through it and then end up changing their minds. I think those teachers, the people who are naturally in positions of power to teach, have higher education and certifications and are specialists in those areas. And you don't get to become a specialist by ignoring data, by ignoring statistics and ignoring reality. So those who tend to embrace the reality tend to be more open-minded and liberal. That was my point, and I think that example illustrates that. Michael, I know you wanted to hop in here.
All right. I just wanted to speak to, get back to this idea that universities have a liberal bias. And they do, because we've changed the definition of liberal and conservative. Conservative was something different 50 years ago. I mean, you take William F. Buckley as an example of somebody that's a bygone era. It doesn't exist anymore. But there are legit and honest conservative positions that can be taken in academia, but they are in philosophy and in economics. But in order for you to get to the point where you could be a PhD level student in philosophy or economics, it is very highly unlikely that you could get to that point and believe the nonsense that climate change is a hoax, that any one of the positions that they take now on the, what I call the red team, because I don't believe it's a conservative movement anymore. I think it's changed completely. It's become tribal. It's become the red team completely. I think actually that in a lot of ways, the Republican Party has become a cult, but it's incredibly unlikely that you could get to an advanced position in academia and still believe all the nonsense that's being pushed on Fox News and Newsmax and OAN and get to the point where you could have an actual conservative position on, say, Thomas Sowell versus Thomas Piketty or the old Locke v. Hobbes argument in philosophy, which you could have a legit conservative position, but you're not going to get to that point and still believe the absolute silly nonsense being pushed by Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity every night. So it's not that they're not conservative, that he's right. David's 100% right. It's just that you have to live in reality to get to that point in academia. You're not going to make it through by standing up to your professor and saying climate change is a hoax because, you know, because it snowed out in.
For example, in climate change, if you are a scientist and you study solar flares and you compare the weather patterns to the activity of the solar flares on the sun, then you're going to be completely ignored.
And you're going to be ignored because it's not accurate. Scientists look at all this data. I've heard these arguments 1,000 times and climate scientists come back at it and they explain exactly why that is. It reminds me of the old argument of the CO2 levels were higher in the air at the time of the dinosaurs, and yet the temperature was roughly the same. It was a little bit warmer. Why is that? Well, that's because the sun was a lot cooler back then, and the sun is getting hotter. It's just, if you look at this little piece of data here, it looks like I've just proved climate science, but you're not, you know who you're not fooling with these arguments? Climate scientists. You might be able to fool a Fox News viewer or the average Joe down the street by saying, oh, if you look at solar flares, or why is it? Look at this trend. There was so much more CO2 in the air 250 million years ago. Why is it that the seas weren't boiling? You might be able to convince your average Joe with that argument. No climate scientist in the world is going
to. So I have a way to package this, I think, that he's going to really be able to relate to. So I want to ask you something, SW.
Yeah.
If some evangelical preacher were to yell out right now, as I've had one do on this show, that there's not a single scientific error or contradiction in the Bible, would you say he's wrong?
Yeah, I would say he's wrong.
Okay, I would agree with you. There is a pastor named Pastor Greg Locke who holds up the Bible and goes on his videos, 785,286 words, not a single one of them has a contradiction. Every single thing is the perfect word of God. Not a single atheist could ever tell me anything wrong with this perfect Bible. And I invited him on the show. He comes on the show. And he's like,
I would say 99% of the Christians wouldn't believe that anyway.
Right, so. So I'm going to illustrate something here back to Michael's point, believe it or not. So he comes on the show. And he goes, you want to just start spitballing? I said, sure. I've been at this a long time. Let's just have a conversation. We start talking. Then I start having ideas pop into my head. I go, hey, how about this verse and this verse? And then I type it up. And I go, what about this verse and this verse? And I type it up. And I'm typing notes as I'm talking to him. And as he's answering me, I'm thinking of new Bible verses. And I type that up. And then to make sure I have the right verse, I open a new tab and I Google it and I bring it in. I go, hey, what about this contradiction over here? And we just had a really organic conversation. And multiple times he would go, oh, yeah, you caught me off guard. I don't know about that. I'm not sure. Yeah, that would appear to be a contradiction, David. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that. And then this went on for an hour and a half, maybe. I'm probably going to post that episode again soon. I've had a lot of requests for it. And he was just completely stumped. And several times he was completely stumped. At the end of the show, he couldn't really find his footing ever. We finished the show. I knew that he was friends with Josh Feirstein as well, who was popular for ragging on Starbucks. And he's a popular TikTok, Instagram preacher. And I know that they're friends. So I email Greg and I say, hey, I would love to talk with Josh Feirstein. He replies and says, you would eat Josh alive. I would never throw him to the lions like that. And I said, okay. And we were done. Not a week later, Greg Locke posts another video holding up a Bible. 785,526 words, not a single one of them is incorrect. An atheist has never shown me a single contradiction in the holy word of God. When someone does that, after completely, just blatantly being dishonest, ignoring things that have been proven to him, do you think we should take him seriously?
Do you think we should take him seriously?
When he comes back and makes another claim about the Bible being perfect after being in a public conversation that proved him wrong, he still acts like that conversation never happened. Do we still let him have a seat at the table and take his word seriously?
Well,
that the Bible's perfect.
In society, we can leave that to God, because you know as well as I do that.
I mean, whenever he starts saying things about the Bible that he has been proven wrong on, yet continues to say the same thing after, despite being proven wrong, continues the same rhetoric to his audience at large. Can we take that seriously?
You know, win people over with that?
He does. He does, believe it or not. He has thousands of followers, and he does.
Yes, I know. I know you said before that you can sit down and you can reason with anyone, but I don't think a majority of people can reason. And this is the danger that I see in the university system. If you're pushing if you're pushing a left agenda, a left worldview, I'm not talking about the truth, because you can have a left agenda that's not truthful either. I mean, not all leftists and progressives, you know, tell the truth.
Okay.
And so the
I understand.
The weakness that a person has in believing experts, okay, or believing things, is this is when I was a Christian, I tried to look at biblical Hebrew, right? And in one passage, they're talking about Abraham, and the word in there is called Shamar. And so God said that Abraham shamarred the Torah. The Torah wasn't even around yet. So looking at that word shamar, at least in my mind, trying to translate it in my feeble way, it means carefully consider and then act on it.
Okay. Right?
And so the thing is the action of the people. So,
right. Oh, that's a great point. That's a great point. It's the action of the people. And yes. Pastor Greg Locke.
Information, brainwash someone. Well, if that's the case, then that's the case.
Okay.
If one of my biggest things about is I don't disbelieve evolution per se, but if the scientists are right, then this world became this world because the processes of evolution, whether you believe that has purpose or intention or not, everything came out that way because of evolutionary pressures. And so when you have a show like yourself and you want to try to talk about things and reason it out, okay, and that reason falls on deaf ears because the people don't have the capacity to reason, and they are what I would call non-playable characters.
Okay.
These characters that whatever society is, they just follow along. You give them their iPhone and then they're happy.
Yeah. So what should I do with those people?
I don't know what to do about them.
Well, I invite them on and I talk to them because
natural selection.
Well, no, because my listeners have that person as their father and their mother and their boss and their uncle and their cousins. And so I engage with those people to show how to begin to reason with someone that you initially think is incapable of reasoning. So I try, but I don't put those people at the same level that I would on some other expert. And my whole point in telling you that Greg Locke or Pastor Greg Locke story, to circle back to what Michael's point was, when he says publicly, the Bible is perfect, everything in the Bible is perfect, there's not a single problem, he does this big challenge, I bring him on the show, I clearly show him that he's wrong, he squirms for an hour and a half, and then goes right back to saying the same thing, he's not being honest, right? He's not being trustworthy. The scientists, quote unquote scientists, who start writing about these solar flares or whatever, trying to affect these weather patterns, they become the Greg Locks of that industry. And the scientists that are reputable go, we've addressed that, bro. We've checked that off. You're welcome to go in your closet and do it, but we are not going to accept you at the table when you're saying things we've already addressed and disproven. That's the point. So it's not that they're ignored because they're conservative. They are ignored because they're wrong. They just happen to be conservative and wrong.
And they're never scientists in the relevant field, by the way. Whenever conservatives say scientists have disagreed with climate change, and then you find out what this, it's never in the relevant field.
It's like an engineer or a dentist or something
had a guy call himself a scientist and it turned out he was a dentist.
I remember 20 years ago, it maybe Time Magazine or whatever it was,
Newsweek. And that's been debunked a thousand times.
And then global warming turns into climate change.
Right, because it was actually climate change before it was global warming. If you did a little research, SW, you'd know this. that Newsweek ran a sensational story because it was sensational. It was one person who thought that we were heading into an ice age. Even then, that was disputed by all the other scientists in the relevant field. And global warming was a term that Al Gore used, but climate change was actually first introduced in the 1950s by climate scientists at the UN. It's always been climate change. These are just conservative talking points. And if you do a little bit of research, you're going to find out that there's nothing there. There's no there there. That doesn't mean climate change is a hoax because it went from, even if it did go from global warming to climate change because it was a more accurate term, that still doesn't disprove the science. It's just stuff Tucker Carlson says on air because his viewers like being told they're right. They don't care about the truth. They just care that you're right. These liberals are idiots. And you, sitting there with no relevant education, are right about climate change and climate scientists are wrong. Aren't you awesome? Who doesn't like being told you're awesome?
I don't like it, but...
Well, I absolutely love it.
He makes me tell him that as part of his paycheck.
That's
he
right.
He requires it.
That data, please. But you're also supposed not
why
to...
Why do I remember the Times report? Whether it was true or not, I didn't say I believed it, and I didn't use it as one of my talking points. My point is that that stuck.
Okay. Right? That's
20 years later. I'm not saying it's true. As far as me trying to look at research in the solar flares, they weren't, as far as I could tell, they weren't giving a particular worldview. They weren't trying to say that was the cause of the climate change. It was simply looking at the data, looking when there's, because the sun definitely goes through periods of more solar flares and less.
Right.
And looking at the changes of the climate on the Earth, and then looking to see what the data said.
And it's always the same, is always the same retort. For one, it's a bad idea to believe a scientist or even scientists. It is a good idea to say that scientific consensus is more likely correct. That's as far as you have to go. Scientific consensus is more likely correct. But every time somebody comes to me and says, did you hear about solar flares? I go, hey, man, you're telling the wrong guy. Go write a paper and have it peer reviewed and win your Nobel Prize. Do you honestly think, and this is not me talking to you necessarily, SW, this is me talking to 1,000 people over the last 10 years. Do you really think if you called up climate scientists, I don't know how you call climate scientists, but let's say you can call up climate scientists and say, do you hear about solar flares? They'd be like, oh my God, we forgot to factor that in.
So I just pulled something up and I want to read this because I didn't know we were going to get into this topic. I just pulled it up. On climate.gov, it says, do solar storms cause heat waves on Earth? And it says, although solar flares and associated coronal mass ejections can bombard Earth's outermost atmosphere with tremendous amounts of energy, most of that energy is reflected back into space by Earth's magnetic field. Because the energy does not reach our planet's surface, it has no measurable influence on surface temperature. The heat wave that affected the eastern and central United States in March 2012 coincided with a flurry of solar eruptions. So it's not unreasonable to wonder if such events are related. After all, the sun's energy is the source of Earth's warmth. But most of the energy released by solar storms on those March 8th through 10th flares is not like the visible ultraviolet light that penetrates Earth's atmosphere to warm the surface. So climate.gov has settled this, and saying, you know, bringing in a quote unquote scientist who wants to bring that back to the table is a bit like asking the stork theorist to have a debate with a gynecologist on where babies come from. Those two people don't get to have the same level of clout.
And moreover,
that's not a political favoritism either. I want him to respond to that. That's not political favoritism. There's one person living in reality, one person playing with words in Google searches. I never want to appeal to authority to the point of fallacy, but authority and education does have to play a role when we are studying things.
Well, I mean, you know, there's so much different theories with every single thing. And a favorite saying of mine is, I don't know if I believe it or not, but if most people believe something, then as a skeptic, then I know they're wrong. And so, you know, I try myself in my own life. I try to be an expert as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I try to be a generalist as much as I can. Okay. I do know that, like, the political posturing about, you know, the world is going to, we have to do it in 12 years. Okay. That's kind of silliness to me. Or the things like when Bill Gates comes out, you know, in his TED talk, and he said that we need to have zero CO2 emissions, right? And he puts the formula up, and, you know, the only
why is that silly to you?
Pardon?
Why is that silly to you that it needs to be done within 12 years?
No, because I went and looked at the conclusions of, I forget what that report is, that 12 years, it was mentioned there, but it wasn't that the world is going to end in 12 years if we don't do this.
Yeah, it was that we were going to reach a tipping point from which we couldn't come back from.
Right. So before we start,
it talked about changing 6 degrees. Okay. And the latest stuff that I saw, it's like we might get 2.5 degrees.
Okay? I don't know where you're seeing this stuff, though. Well, and already you've shown us that because you talk about the solar flares and whatnot, that you clearly are going to sources that are either dishonest or inaccurate. So where'd you get that? The 2 degrees v 6 degrees.
The 2 degrees and 6 degrees, you know, you can look at multiple different sources to show what the statistics show. I don't know. I'm conservative in my views. I don't care about conservative talking points. I try not to use conservative talking points. What I try to do is I try to look at a particular paper, right, and to see what the statistics are, whether there's confirmation bias, whether there's leaving stuff out, okay, and stuff that is purported to be true. There's some grave concerns about the conclusions that they draw.
Okay, so to take
a bunch of studies and say, well, okay, let's let the experts agree on what I should believe, and let's not even look at it.
Okay, I don't know your background or what you specialize in, but I'll tell you this: I just did an audiobook with Lawrence Krauss. I was a producer on it. I produced and directed and put out the audiobook. It's brand new. Mm-hmm. It's called The Physics of Climate Change, and I was in studio with him for 3 days producing this book. Now he read it because people want to hear him do his own books. But I was there word for word multiple times. It's a long process and I learned a lot. And then I took notes. And then at the end of the audiobook, we sat down and recorded about a 30-minute interview that was like a special thing just for the person who buys the audiobook. And as I had questions as we were recording, I wrote down my own notes in my part of the studio. And then at the end, we sat down across from one another and I asked him all the questions I had after having him read the book to me for 3 days. And I learned so much about climate change and the physics associated with climate change that, and by the way, he provides sources. He provides multiple different resources. These were so important to him because we never, when we produce audiobooks, we never read like the index or the appendix or table of contents or any of that nonsense. He was adamant on, he wanted to read the resources because the person who gets the audiobook only, he wants to make sure they can go to the relevant websites and fact check him. And so it's all in there. And if you get the audiobook, by the way, there's a PDF that comes with it that has all this stuff that's like clickable and you can find all the data as well as multiple figures from different science books throughout the world, actually. He talked with the world's leading experts on this. And the urgency is because what we do today is not reflected in the atmosphere today. What we do today is reflected in the ocean temperatures. The ocean temperatures rise, and if we were to stop producing all emissions right now, the temperature would still continue to go up. It takes years and years and years for all of the heat that we put into the water to be generated out into the atmosphere. And so I'm not a specialist on it enough to go full on and have a debate about climate change, but I would point you to that resource. And the reason I would recommend the audiobook is because it has the additional notes and the additional interview where he is sort of challenged and questioned at the end. Because there were some things that I was like, well, you said this, but then you said this. I thought it was a mistake, and he cleared it up in the interview. And it was my misunderstanding of it. So I would recommend you look into that, because there is clear evidence of climate change just in the most recent years. And the reason it is so absolutely important that we do something right now is because it was probably already too late 10 years ago. And so it is extremely important. If you look into how climate change, how long it takes for the heat to actually rise, you'll understand why 12 years is something that is probably even too long. Because just a very small temperature rise, 2 degrees, 3 degrees, 6 degrees, can cause sea level changes of 1 meter. Well, that may not be a big deal if you're 500 feet above sea level, like Los Angeles, or 1,000 feet above sea level, like many parts of the country, or living on a mountainside somewhere. But there are parts of the Amazon, there are parts of the Philippines, there are parts of many areas that are 1 meter above sea level. And that 1 meter rise puts entire cities underwater. And people are walking around in knee-deep water at just 1 meter rise. And he gets into that. He goes to those areas. He talks with those people. He looks at the huts and the houses and the businesses and the buildings and everything that would be destroyed if it goes up by 1 meter. And then he looks into, those areas produce the vast majority of the world's rice. So what happens to rice consumption? What happens to rice profits? How does this area make their money? They're going to now be living in poverty and have to evacuate and be refugees in other places. So where are you going when your town is underwater? These are massive issues that are likely already going to happen in our lifetimes. So this 12-year thing is definitely something we need to pay attention to.
No, I definitely agree. I definitely agree. But for Greta Thunberg to come out and influence so many young girls and them have so much fear that the world is going to end in 12 years, this is not reasonable. This is not logical. If we know that these things are going to happen, and the scientists are right, then we need to start moving the cities. We need to start moving the people. If this stuff is inevitable, I mean, the question is, what do you do about it? Do you stop human life?
No, he addresses that in the book. He talks about things like they can do.
It's like a question. I'll use a different example. Let's say lots of people die in car accidents. Should we make the speed limit and make all cars only go 5 miles an hour? That will solve that problem. But the quality of life and what people want to give up, we see it with the lockdown.
Yeah, but that's not, it's not just either or. It's not that black and white, though. And I think you know that. I mean, there are other ways. There are other ways of renewable energy. There are ways of renewable energy that do not heat up the planet in the same way. And we're trying to get to that. But again, anytime we do, when liberals propose those types of things, the conservatives tend to shoot it down. And to Michael's point, it's typically because the oil and gas and coal industries are funding their campaigns. So they are financially obligated to keep those oil and gas and fuel companies continuing to do the things that are causing the global warming. So it ultimately becomes political, but the liberals are once again looking at the statistics and trying to do what's right based on reality, and the corporate greed on the right is stopping people from listening to the liberals.
Look, the biggest companies in the United States nowadays are not conservative. These are run by liberals.
That's such a generic statement. I don't even know what you're talking about. We would have to dive
tech.
Into
He's
their
talking like, tech.
Yeah, there are huge tech companies, but you know, these
Amazon, Google.
Right.
Yeah, they're not drilling.
Right. And can I just make 2 points?
Google isn't drilling in the middle of Arizona.
Right. Before we get into those 2 points. So the two things I want to say real quick are, number one, you just said that the fossil fuel companies are funding the conservative campaigns. They're also funding the studies that counter the scientific consensus on climate change.
Right.
You can trace the monies that
funded. So then people can come on a podcast and go, a study says, right, exactly. Yeah, a study paid for by.
And you can trace the monies all the way back to Exxon every single time. Maybe not Exxon, but to fossil fuel companies. Secondly, when you say, if we all drove 5 miles an hour, that would save the problem with people dying in car crashes. Now, when I get into a car and I drive at 55 miles an hour, it might be an unsafe speed. There might be a chance of a car crash, but the threat is to me. What we're doing with the planet is a threat to future generations. Do we not have a moral obligation to the people that we know for fact will be here, that have no voice because they don't exist yet? I say we do. We absolutely have a moral obligation to them.
And by the way, speed limits are in place because of that. That's why you can't just drive as fast as you want, as much as you want. So regulations on speed are precisely to save lives. Mm-hmm. So having more and more regulations on how much pollution we can put into the air is what liberals are asking for. That's exactly what we're doing, is asking for a speed limit, not 5 miles per hour, but what we're saying is a plan over the next 5 to 20 years to be at zero emissions.
Obviously, there would be some kind of study that could be done to say what the optimal is to stop a majority. But
and there are.
The thing with, let's say, coal, or like you go to a poor country, right, and they're burning wood, or they're burning other stuff, which produces very low amount of heat. Okay, and then you start going up more efficient and more efficient and more efficient. And the most efficient, which no one wants to talk about, is, and it's been the safest, is nuclear power. And so the thing with nuclear power is that it could be cheaper, and it produces a lot more power for the same amount, or even coal, or even oil. Green energy can't even get close to the amount of you can put windmills and produce wind power in the whole U.S. and it's still not going to even get close to what nuclear power could do. And so then you're looking at like the poor places, like let's say with climate change, you're looking at the poor places. And it's not that the climate change and you get flooding is the problem. They don't have infrastructure anywhere to mitigate the flooding that comes in through, you know, Bangladesh or wherever, and wipes people out. I mean,
I'm having trouble wrapping my head around your solution being move the cities. You're talking millions of people. You're talking homes that have been built and villages and businesses that exist. Just telling people to move so we can continue cranking out oil and gas just sounds incredibly selfish to me, SW, and I don't think you're that guy, but I don't know why can't you just be on our side? What's stopping you from crossing over and going, well, hey, look, if those are the statistics, let's embrace what the scientists are saying and stop that kind of production. Let's shift to renewable energies. Why are we doing things that are going to ruin that environment? Why is your approach to just move out of the area so we can go flood it?
I'm not saying that we should flood it. I'm not in favor of Exxon. I'm not in favor of scientific companies like Monsanto that have all this science behind them that causes poverty because they have genetically engineered something and you have to buy from it and you can't get your own seed. Okay. This is all science.
No, it's not.
No, that's
blaming science for that is absurd.
I'm talking about Roundup Ready, and I'm a big opponent.
I'm not talking about Roundup Ready. What I'm talking about is using science and genetically modifying things.
What are you talking about?
Now you're just trying to attack science. Hold on, one second.
GMO, just that sounds like a but. Again, he says he doesn't use conservative talking points, but honestly, that's all this has been, is conservative hitting points of. I feel like it's a Tucker Carlson script. I mean, come on, that, genetically modified. What do you mean by that? Bananas are genetically modified, or they would have seeds in them. The cow is a genetically modified organism. It wouldn't exist in nature. What do you mean genetically modified?
I'm talking about like in India, where the subsistence farmers, Monsanto came in and were gracious enough to give them genetically modified corn for them to grow. And you can't get seed from genetically modified corn for the crop of next year. You have to buy.
Right. And you're trying to blame science.
Okay. There are greedy corporate people that will take advantage of people in need. That's not the fault of science. What do you.
You sound like, you know, these people that these, you know, quite frankly, Scientologists do this with psychology all the time, and they'll blame everything on psychologists. And now you're just creating a boogeyman by saying science can also be bad because look, Monsanto uses science and look what they've done. The fact of the matter is, do you not believe in innovation?
Monsanto, in my opinion, is evil.
They might well be.
Right, but it's not the science's fault. You're blaming science that's for doing it.
What was the process of them genetically modifying?
It's golden rice you're talking about, and I know a lot about it. And you're probably right, yes. And in fact, they have a – look, I'm not going to get into Monsanto because you're using it as a boogeyman to say science is bad. Why do you want to go to after science? Do you not believe in innovation? Is America not run on innovation? Why do you think in the 21st century the best solution we have for energy is to open up a mountain and burn the rocks inside? Surely we can do better than that. Why are we fighting for that in the 21st century? Why are conservatives who are supposed to be pro-business so against innovation that they've been burning coal for thousands of years? Why are you fighting for it? We can do better. Do you think it's not related to the huge donations the coal companies give to the Republican Party?
I don't know.
I think it is.
Blaming science for corporate greed is like me blaming gravity for being fat. I mean, sure, if gravity didn't exist, I wouldn't weigh as much on the scale, but that's definitely not the cause, right?
I'm not saying it's a causal relationship, but they do indeed use science to produce their greed. Yes, they have.
Okay. If you're going to go down this road, you might as well go all the way down because the next stop is to talk about the Nazi scientists. This is where this goes.
No, they also use, you know, careerbuilder.com to hire employees. So let's blame them as part of the cabal. And you know what? They use the public water system in their toilets. So let's just put them on the block. Yeah. Like we can't, corporate greed's going to corporate greed.
I'm not blaming science on stuff. I'm not in favor of the worldview is because science has big weaknesses.
But the solution to bad science is more science. If there's a problem with science, only science can expose it and fix it. Science has been wrong in the past, which is why science doesn't give you the right answer. Science gives you the best answer based on the available information and evidence. That's all science is.
But the presumption is, when you have a scientific fact, that fact is true. So saying it's the best, that's not how it's portrayed.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yes, it is.
It's portrayed as, look at these arrogant scientists saying they're right and we're wrong on Fox News every night. That's the way you're hearing it. But the scientist is actually a very humble individual. Mm-hmm. He'll say, based on the information we have at this time, this is the best answer we can give you. That's all they're going to say. Scientists don't strut around like
Fox News. I don't watch Fox News. I don't. Who did you else mention? Tucker Carlson. I do not watch Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, or any of the other things.
You're getting these conservative talking points because I know them all in advance. You haven't said a single thing that I wasn't aware of.
Will you tell us what media you consume or where you get the information?
Well, I try to read a lot, a lot of different points of view.
Right. From where though?
I try to
name some sources that you read.
Well, just recently I was reading Joseph Heinrich on Weird, the Western educated industrial or rich democracy and how that affects culture.
I was meaning media as far as news on Monsanto and climate change and like where are you consuming your information? Mine is Associated Press more than anything. Well, second would be like the CNN, and then I watch Fox News.
Specifically for Monsanto, I lived in Europe for about 10 years. I mean, I lived in Portugal for a period of time, and then we lived in Germany. And most of the information that I got from Monsanto was European sources.
I'm no fan of Monsanto.
Yeah, no, and we're not defending Monsanto. The issue we have is the critical thinking left turn where you go, hey, corporate greed. And Michael and I go, yeah, corporate greed. And yeah, that doesn't make seeds. Yeah, that's wrong. They're doing it on purpose. Tobacco did the same thing. And people want you to keep buying their products. And I'm literally writing a book right now about businesses taking advantage of people and laws allowing it. That's my focus right now. So I'm on board with that. But when you take that left turn and go, that's science doing that, we are up in arms going, you can't blame science for somebody abusing their corporate power. And I feel like this show is off the rails now, and I want to get it back on.
Guess who Monsanto gives
the majority of their political donations to in the United States? It ain't the Democrats.
Well, they're all on the, you know, which committee.
Well, I'm not sure, but I'll admit that both parties are corporatist parties at this point. If that's the point you're trying to make, I would agree with that as well.
Yeah, just not to the same level. We know that politicians are, you know, definitely equal opportunity offenders, but I would say that the right tends to take more of the opportunities in a larger part of the way. If there were no Democrats in charge whatsoever, there would be no stimulus. Like this new thing that just passed, it's incredibly progressive, and there are going to be a lot of conservative people who get checks because liberals fought for them. And I don't think they're going to see that. The conservative media is going to twist it.
I got a check at the end of December from Trump.
We're going down a rabbit hole here, but you have a 40-hour work week because of unions and liberals fighting for that. You have their child labor laws are in place. Your kids didn't have to go to work in factories at 7 years old because people fighting against conservative values.
I lived in Europe, and it wasn't unions that made a short work week. It wasn't unions that got...
Michael, he said in his email, he is a contrarian. Whatever you say, he's going
to
find the opposite. He's going
to
try.
I'm going to say something that is a little bit off, but I would love to say it, that if you're interested in SW, they don't call it Monsanto in the film, but the film Michael Clayton touches is loosely based on Monsanto. It's an excellent film starring George Clooney. I'd recommend it to anybody.
All right, so here's what I want to do. I noticed a couple of things in your email that I have to talk about with you. And some of them are really going to be fun and kind of funny and to me anyway. And some of them are, I want to give you a chance to clarify. So I'm seeing here on your, so at the bottom of our form, we always ask everyone what their social media is in case you want to promote something. You know, some people come on and have books or podcasts or YouTube channels or whatever. And under Michael, get this, on Twitter, we ask for a Twitter URL. He says none because of cancel culture. And then I thought that was funny. And then it says Facebook, none because of cancel culture. And then it says Instagram, really none. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really funny.
I'm in favor of what's the word you want to use? Long form. And so,
okay,
Twitter and Instagram and all this kind of stuff is for the non-playable character.
Well, okay, so hold on. So I challenge that because I am on Twitter quite often. So I take offense to that. I'm now a non-playable character in your world. So we'll see how that goes. I want to get into that.
No, I didn't say.
No, let me finish though. Let me host the show. Let me get us into the next segment. Okay. So I want to get into why you said because of cancel culture. I want to find out if you were canceled, if you were removed. We'll get into that. And you also said in there in the form that same-sex marriage should not be legal and women should submit to men. Are both of those true? Both of those are true?
Yes, with the explanation. Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to find out what that explanation is. We're going to continue the conversation at patreon.com/DavidCSmalley. I want to find out the answers to those questions about same-sex marriage, about women submitting, and why the Twitter and Facebook do not exist for him because of cancel culture. I can't wait to get into the rest of this. The conversation continues at patreon.com/DavidCSmalley. If you're not coming with us, please, at least drive like you know each other.